What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump at his first post-election news conference acknowledged Wednesday Russia likely meddled in last November's U.S. election.
As far as hacking, I think it was Russia, but I think we also get hacked by other countries and other people.
A U.S. intelligence assessment given to the president-elect last week concluded President Vladimir Putin may have ordered the hacking. Mr. Trump insisted it's important the U.S. try to have good relations with the Russian leader.
Well, if Putin likes Donald Trump, I consider that an asset, not a liability, because we have a horrible relationship with Russia. Russia can help us fight ISIS, which, by the way, is number one tricky. I mean, if you look, this administration created ISIS by leaving at the wrong time.
The president-elect also denounced reports Tuesday about a dossier leaked to the news media containing unproven information that Russia compiled tawdry personal information to compromise him and that his campaign had colluded with Russian intelligence. Mr. Trump said the intelligence community may be to blame for that leak.
They looked at that nonsense that was released by maybe the intelligence agencies. Who knows? But maybe the intelligence agencies, which would be a tremendous blot on their record if they in fact did that, a tremendous blot.
The director of national intelligence, James Clapper, said he spoke late Wednesday with Mr. Trump, telling him he did not believe the leak came from the intelligence committee. Gambia's President Yahya Jammeh Wednesday warned the international community against interfering in the West African country's political dispute. Mr. Jammeh, in power since 1994, accepted election defeat to opposition leader Adama Barrow following a December 1st ballot, but reversed himself and demanded a new election. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State nominee Rex Tillerson in confirmation hearings Wednesday said Russia poses a danger, citing the annexation of Crimea and its complicity in the Syrian conflict. But he blamed previous U.S. policy for a resurgent Russia.
Our NATO allies are right to be alarmed at a resurgent Russia. But it was in the absence of American leadership that this door was left open and unintended signals were sent. We backtracked on commitments we made to allies. We sent weak or mixed signals with red lines that turned into green lights. We did not recognize that Russia does not think like we do.
Tillerson and ExxonMobil chief executive called for an open and frank dialogue with Moscow about its ambitions. He said the U.S. must be steadfast in the face of disagreements with the Kremlin, adding it must be held to account for its actions. He also said he favors maintaining current sanctions on Russia. According to state television, the Syrian government and rebels have agreed on a plan to repair damage to a spring that is a key water source in the Wadi Barada Valley to the capital, Damascus. The rebel-held district has been the object of a government assault to dislodge him. The spring was knocked out last month, severely reducing water supplies to the capital. In Yemen, dozens of fighters on both sides of the conflict were killed in the past 2 days as the government launched an offensive against Houthi rebels near the strategic Red Sea Strait of Bab el-Mandab. Meanwhile, British parliamentarian Andrew Mitchell toured the devastated northern city of Sada.
Looking around this total destruction and devastation that has been wrought on the people of Sada, it's very difficult to understand or see how that in any way advances the aims of the coalition and the aims of Saudi Arabia. It seems to me to be completely counterproductive to everything they are trying to achieve.
A UN Children's Fund representative Wednesday said the two-year conflict has taken the lives of nearly 1,400 children, forced the closure of hundreds of schools. He said 1.7 million people suffer from moderate malnutrition. In Europe, at least 65 have died as a result of bitter cold and heavy snows in Eastern Europe. People are struggling with travel delays, power outages, and sub-zero temperatures. Aid agencies warn dozens of migrants are at risk of freezing to death as the cold extends as far south as Greece. 5 Malian soldiers were killed, 3 wounded Wednesday when their vehicle hit a roadside bomb. Between the central Ségou and Mopti regions, no immediate claim of responsibility, but al-Qaeda-linked militants regularly stage ambushes and plant explosive devices aimed at Malian and UN troops. U.S. stocks posted gains in trading Wednesday with the benchmark Dow Jones average up nearly 100 points to 19,954. Meanwhile, European plane maker Airbus Wednesday said it delivered a record number of commercial aircraft last year. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Thursday, the 12th day of January, and here are some of the stories we are covering. It's Gambian President Yahya Jammeh softening his position about not wanting to step down.
I hereby appoint the Secretary General as Mediator General for this trying period and mandate him to work with the Minister of Justice and the National Assembly to draft a general amnesty bill to confirm and ensure that there is no witch hunt.
That's President Yahya Jammeh speaking late Tuesday night as he called for a peaceful resolution of the country's political crisis. Gambia's UN Deputy Ambassador explains why some Gambian envoys were sacked. The second phase of talks to end political crisis in the DRC has begun, and Kenyan doctors' strike continues as they and the government disagree on salaries.
The minimum that doctors are looking for, let's sit honestly on a table and discuss and start solving these issues so that we can work in a good environment where there's no intimidation based on your tribe or where you come from.
That's Dr. L.A. Nyaim at the Kenyatta National Hospital in Nairobi. Cameroon authorities say they killed four suspected Boko Haram suicide bombers on Wednesday, and the U.S. government echoes its commitment to helping Liberia develop. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. There's been yet another defection from Gambian President Yahya Jammeh's government as he continues to cling to power following his defeat in the December 1st election. According to the Exile Freedom newspaper based in the United States, two senior army officers, a colonel and a naval captain, arrived in Senegal on Wednesday. Meanwhile, President Jammeh appears to be softening his position about not wanting to step down. As Sini M.K. Marina reports from neighboring Senegal, Mr. Jammeh has called for forgiveness and the reopening of communication with President-elect Adama Barrow's winning coalition.
A surprise Tuesday midnight TV appearance. The outgoing Gambian President Yahya Jammeh, who is increasingly facing international isolation for refusing to step down after losing his fifth-term re-election bid to coalition leader Adama Barrow, seems to bow down. In a speech to the nation, Jammeh instructed his Attorney General and Minister of Justice to draft an amnesty bill in an attempt to peacefully resolve the political crisis in the Gambia. He also appointed a new Secretary General, little known Moussa Diallo, to mediate the political standoff between him and the coalition government.
I hereby appoint the Secretary General as Mediator General for this trying period and mandate him to, one, ensure the public and civil service continues to work proficiently and without fear or favor in an apolitical manner in the service of the nation. Two, meet with all stakeholders in the country and prepare a meeting so that all parties can be heard and we resolve any mistrust and issues amongst ourselves. Three, to work with the Minister of Justice and the National Assembly to draft a general amnesty bill to confirm and ensure that there is no witch hunt so that we can restore a climate of confidence and security.
The so-called draft amnesty bill will seek, among others, amicable solving the political crisis, non-prosecution of regime members, no arrest of opposition supporters, said a Justice Department official in Banjul. The details, however, still remain unclear, but opposition activists said it is meant to protect Jammeh and his henchmen from crimes against the state and human rights abuses. Although Mr. Jammeh did not propose a timeline, it is hoped that the bill will be made available before his term expired next week. Coalition spokesperson Khalifa Sallah said President Jammeh will not be prosecuted and he will be treated as a stateman in a way befitting a former leader and will be consulted by President-elect Adama Barrow on key state matters. It is the first time President Jammeh is speaking of amnesty. There were calls for his non-prosecution when he initially accepted defeat. Jammeh also asked for forgiveness but failed to state whether he will step down to ensure smooth transfer of power to President-elect Adama Barrow. Mr. Jammeh also issued an executive order for nobody to be arrested from November 1st to January 31st.
I hereby issue an executive order to that effect that nobody be arrested or prosecuted due to acts or omissions in the pre- and post-electoral period with effective dates from November 1st, 2016 to January 31st, 2017.
ECOWAS leaders will meet Jammeh on Friday in first round of talks to further persuade him to step down. For Daybreak Africa, I am Seni M.K. Marina reporting from Dakar, Senegal.
Gambia's acting ambassador to the United Nations says President Yahya Jammeh was right in dismissing 12 top envoys who failed to defend the government following the disputed December 1st presidential election. The 12 envoys had called on Jammeh to step down and hand over power peacefully to Adama Barrow, who the Independent Electoral Commission declared the winner of the vote. Opposition supporters hailed the sacked envoys as true heroes who spoke on behalf of the Gambian people. But acting ambassador Sam Sudain Sarr tells viewers Peter Clotty the sacked envoys condemned the Jammeh administration instead of defending it.
They did not defend the government that they were supposed to represent at these very trying times when they were expected to do so. The Gambia government really gave them the positions, you know, with the expectation that during these circumstances like this, they will stand by the government and explain at least the conditions or the situations that are not very clear to the world.
Some in the Gambia are telling me that these ambassadors who were fired were speaking on behalf of the Gambians who voted supposedly Adama Barrow into power, and that irrespective of them serving at the behest or at the pleasure of President Yahya Jammeh, they represent the people of Gambia and not necessarily the president. So they spoke on behalf of the people. What do you say to that?
Yes, one could understand that if there was no controversy over the election. But when you have an election where results are read on the 2nd, and then 3 days after, the very electoral commission that conducted the results came back and said, we mistakenly added 63,909 votes to the winner, which made him the winner. But when we subtracted those votes, it brought down his numbers drastically, showing that if they added the actual winning numbers to President Jammeh, he will win with 236,589 votes, 8,881 votes far ahead of Adama Barrow.
What is the relationship, the current relationship between the Gambia and Dakar? Because President Macky Sall is the first West African leader to officially congratulate Adama Barrow as the legitimately elected president of the Gambia, who is scheduled to be installed on January 19 per the constitution of the Gambia. What is the current relationship between Dakar and Banjul?
The government of President Macky Sall has never been a good partner to President Jammeh's government. They have not gotten along for a long, long, long time. You know, they don't like each other. And apparently you could see that being manifested in the wake of this election controversy. Macky Sall is the one who is telling to the world that President Jammeh came out with no reason whatsoever for changing his mind, which is false. There are evidence, you know, very compelling to show why he changed his mind.
Sam Sudain Sarr is the acting Gambian ambassador to the United Nations. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from New York City. The second phase of political talks about how to implement a New Year's Eve deal has begun in the Democratic Republic of Congo. If applied, the agreement paves the way for the departure of President Joseph Kabila and the holding of elections this year. William Klaus has the latest from the Congolese capital, Kinshasa.
The DRC's political deal was concluded on the final day of 2016, signed by President Joseph Kabila's ruling alliance and the Rassemblement, the largest opposition coalition. Delayed elections, originally scheduled for November, and Kabila's decision not to leave office when his second term expired on December 19th, launched the DRC into uncharted and volatile waters. There are widespread fears that Kabila would like to change the constitution to permit him to serve a third term. But the new agreement stipulates that its signatories will not attempt to alter the constitution. It also states that elections to find Kabila's successor should be held in late 2017 and provides for the establishment of a government of national unity headed by a prime minister from the Rassemblement. VOA spoke with Stephanie Walters from the Institute for Security Studies Africa.
The deal on paper is a good deal, and if we could get this political accord implemented and get all the remainder of the people who haven't signed it yet to sign it, then it's an extremely good roadmap. It's an actual resolution of the crisis that we had all last year.
The Congolese Catholic Church, known as CENCO, is mediating the talks, and its vice president has said that this second phase will be the most difficult part. An agreement is needed on the composition of the new government, the Electoral Commission, and the committee tasked with monitoring implementation of the accord. But Walters says several obstacles stand in the way of the smooth implementation of the agreement. One is the logistical challenge of holding presidential, parliamentary, and provincial elections in this huge and mostly undeveloped country by the end of this year. Another is Prime Minister Sami Badibanga, who was appointed in November after a previous set of negotiations boycotted by the Rassemblement. Badibanga and some of his ministers have refused to recognise this new agreement.
Badibanga is key to the implementation of this whole thing because the accord calls for the formation of a new government and of the appointment of a new prime minister. And if Badibanga stands in the way, that's going to be a problem.
Even though Kabila's ruling alliance has signed the deal, some senior members have criticised the accord for its lack of inclusivity and suggested that the new government cannot be put in place until March, when Parliament reopens. On Wednesday, CENCO's president said he wants to conclude this phase of the negotiations within 4 days. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Thursday, January 12th. Let's send shout out to listeners on these our VOA affiliate stations, Rush FM in Bamenda, Cameroon, and Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Four female suicide bombers were killed Wednesday after crossing into northern Cameroon from Nigeria, according to local officials. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, the news underscores the continued threats in Nigeria's border areas.
The governor of Cameroon's far north region, Midjiyawa Bakari, told VOA that self-defense groups spotted the four young women crossing the border in pairs early Wednesday. Three of them detonated their suicide vests, killing only themselves, the governor said, while the fourth was shot and killed by soldiers.
C'est l'occasion pour nous de présenter nos félicitations et nos encouragements aux forces de défense et de sécurité.
He says he is congratulating the military and self-defense groups who have dedicated their lives to fight the terrorists. He says the population should know that the war against Boko Haram has not ended, so they should double their vigilance, knowing Cameroon is still fighting the war. Cameroon Minister of Communication and Government spokesperson Issa Chiruma told VOA that troops have been pushing back on the cross-border threat. He said a series of joint raids by Cameroonian and Nigerian troops begun in mid-December has destroyed a Boko Haram logistical base in Goshe. He said the base was used to mount deadly cross-border attacks on civilians.
Several manufacturing units of explosive devices were destroyed. A dozen of explosive devices was neutralized. Training camp were dismantled. 100 of terrorists were definitely neutralized. Over 30 fighters were captured and handed over to Nigeria forces. Hundreds of hostages were freed and handed over to Nigeria forces.
VOA could not immediately verify that information. Access to combat zones remains restricted, and mobile communications are spotty. Chiruma said the military gains have not come without a cost. He said three Cameroonian soldiers were killed last week, one by a bomb and two others during heavy fighting. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Some 5,000 striking public health professionals in Kenya faced the prospect of termination yesterday, Wednesday, for staying off the job as the doctor's strike enters its sixth week. Financial concerns and other issues are at the heart of the matter. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The health ministry says 80% of the doctors are paid by counties whose governors have threatened to fire any physician not back to work by now. Doctors, however, are ignoring the threat. Eli Nyaim, a surgeon at Kenyatta National Hospital, is one of the thousands of doctors who have walked off the job. He says intimidation will not work.
We are giving ultimatums without looking at the background of why we got into this problem in the first instance. So the minimum that doctors are looking for, let's sit honestly on a table and discuss and start solving these issues so that we can work in a good environment where there's no intimidation based on your tribe or where you come from.
Kajiado County Governor David Nkendiaye says he would like to negotiate with doctors. We don't want to push them and go to the direction that the doctor should be sacked. I would like us to speak and agree. Dr. Richard Ayer teaches at the University of Nairobi School of Public Health. He says the dispute between the doctors and the government is not only about salaries, but the way money for health is spent.
It's being framed as a money issue. To me, it's not a money issue. It's an accountability issue. If you look at the law says that when a person dies, it's the doctor who has to sign. But all the money in healthcare is either sitting with a private hospital or it is sitting with the governor or the national ministry. The people who are not accountable for the patient, they don't face the patient every day.
Aya says only 20% of physicians treat patients at the public health centres. The rest work in private medical facilities. The public hospital, however, treats 90% of the patients. On Tuesday, the Employment and Labour Relations Court issued an arrest warrant for the leaders of the doctor union for contempt of court, saying they were ordered to stop the strike but had failed to do so. The KMPDU, which represent Kenya medical practitioners, pharmacists and dentists, says the healthcare providers will not be cowed by threats of termination. The striking professionals say all they want is for the government to fully implement a collective bargaining agreement they signed in 2013. The agreement calls for the salaries to more than double and addresses concerns about how hospitals are equipped and the security of medical staff. The government says the rises will cost $120 million a year. Finance Minister Henry Rotich says the government cannot fulfill the demands spelled out in the agreement.
There wasn't enough consultation. Otherwise, we would have had an CBA that was going to be implemented. So because of that rush, the circumstances in which it was signed, we are now in this position.
Now the doctors await the governor's next move. The national government has threatened to hire medics from outside the country to replace the striking healthcare professionals. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
As the U.S. prepares to inaugurate its 45th president, Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield this week told a visiting Liberian delegation that while new faces will be popping up everywhere in the U.S. government with new administration, the commitment to stand together with Liberia will remain as it has been for more than 170 years. Mariama Diallo reports.
In her closing remarks and joint statement signing ceremony at the State Department with the Liberian Foreign Minister, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield vowed to continue helping the West African nation.
Our joint statement affirms our commitment to work together to address the challenges Liberia currently faces and acknowledges the importance of these issues for Liberia's overall economic development.
Liberia is still recovering from two brutal civil wars, which ended in 2003, and an Ebola outbreak that killed about 4,800 people between 2014 and 2016. This is the third U.S.-Liberia partnership dialogue discussing how to expand agricultural production and trade, enhance the country's investment and infrastructure climate, and post-Ebola recovery and health-strengthening efforts. The challenge for Liberia, Thomas-Greenfield says, is to make as much progress as it can in the time it has.
Your challenge is to send a clear message to the rest of the world that Liberia's prioritization of embracing reform and focusing on infrastructure development means that Liberia will be ready for business.
The day's discussion, divided in group sessions, focused on ways the U.S. can assist Liberia on diversifying its economy away from commodity-driven exports and supporting private sector growth through expanded financial services and credit facilities, Liberian Foreign Minister Marjan Kamara said.
In response to a request from the Minister of Finance and Development Planning for support in attracting private equity to Liberia, particularly in structuring sovereign bond guarantees, the U.S. offered to provide such support. This will go a long way to enhance Liberia's capacity to finance critical infrastructure deficits, especially in energy and roads.
As the West African country gears up for presidential elections in October, a recent survey of more than 1,500 people by the aid agency Catholic Relief Services says that half of all Liberians think their country could plunge back into conflict more than a decade after civil war ended. Systemic corruption in the public sector, tiffs over land ownership, and high rates of youth unemployment were cited by Liberians as the three main factors that could incite violence in a survey carried out by CRS. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria.
Good morning, James. We begin with teams' preparations ahead of the biggest continental sports showpiece, the African Cup of Nations, which begins in Gabon in 2 days' time. Wilfred Zaha scored his first goal for African champions, the Ivory Coast, as they trounced Uganda 3-0 on Wednesday in the warm-up match for the 2017 Cup of Nations. Ivory Coast opponents in that friendly, the Cranes of Uganda, ended the country's 38-year jinx to qualify for the games in Gabon this year. The Cranes got a major boost for their preparations from Parliament earlier this week when the Speaker, Rebecca Kadaga, says 500,000 Ugandan shillings will be deducted from each Member of Parliament and given to the national team.
We had the good news that the Uganda Cranes have again been ranked as the best team in the African continent by the Confederation of African Football. Our very own Dennis Onyango is the 10th best goalkeeper in the world. When we last qualified for the finals, we had agreed that we contribute 500,000 shillings each, support them and give them more courage.
Elsewhere, Ghana, beaten on penalties by the Ivory Coast in 2015 African Cup of Nations final, have also opted for club opponents and overcame Bonyan Dakor of Uzbekistan 2-0 in the UAE in a friendly played on Wednesday. After the friendly, coach Avram Grant expressed cautious optimism that the Black Stars will do well and will work to qualify from the group.
We need first to know that the first game against Uganda is a very, very difficult game. We saw them how they beat easily Slovakia 3-1.
And to Togo, who have not scheduled any friendly internationals, came from 2 goals behind to defeat top-flight club Diambas 3-2 in Senegal, with Alexis Ramao snatching the winner. On Tuesday, Cameroon and Zimbabwe drew 1-1 in a friendly encounter, both teams using the match to gauge their strengths ahead of the competition. Coach Kalistos Pasua believes the Warriors can pull up some surprises at the tournament despite their challenges with players' bonuses.
The fact that we are here, we have put problems aside. The boys are ready to go, and you can even see the way they were playing. You can even see there was that hunger to win. Of course, we might talk of problems, but again, they were solved, and it's football now.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's over to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a wonderful day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, January 12th.
Permit me use your medium to call on President Yahya Jammeh of Gambia to please change his mind to drop power, because political desperation leads to political crisis, and political crisis also leads to political war, or can also lead to civil war. Albert Alagbo, from Abudugato Ranch, Bekele Ward, in Obaniko local government area of Kosova State, Nigeria. Thank you.
Thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. And that's it for this Thursday, January 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, today's producer David Van Dee, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook. I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good Thursday.
Do you love music from Africa and the world? VOA has the latest hits, interviews with the artists, and we are glad to take your requests. The Voice of America has what you're looking for. We have music shows to please everyone. Join us on the radio or on the internet to listen day or night. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on your favorite program. Just follow your ears. Music from Africa and the world. We've got it on VOA.